cliffcentral.com.
I forgot how cute she is. Lee Lemsman, you know that. Oh, you're too gorgeous. Most of the comics I look like Warren.
Which is unfortunate.
Oh, go on, Gareth. Go on.
And make us laugh. I might fall in love with you if I go to one of your shows. I know you're funny, but Jesus.
Thank you, Gareth.
Good looking and funny. Like one of those rare things like Sarah Silverman. People don't know how to deal with that.
Ooh, it's like, oh my gosh, no, tone down one thing.
Yeah, please. How can you have two talents and the rest of us have not even one? We're talking to Lihle Msimang, Warren Robertson, who are here. They are both well-known South African comics, both do amazing work, both very, very popular and famous, and are making a killing in the comedy world, which is actually, I'm pleased to say, something that's possible these days. Never used to be. Like, comics used to be poor. They used to ask the rest of us for money.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. You'd have to talk
lights.
To Barry Hilton and Mel Miller about that.
Yeah, but those guys have been around so long that even if they'd saved 5% of what they earned at every gig, they've done so many gigs of such a long time.
Such a long time. They're just like, okay.
No, you're right. I got
you're the same as us now.
I got very depressed at the One Comics Choice Awards because Joe Mafella did his speech, and his speech was basically just about how poor he was.
Yeah.
So I got super depressed about that. But it's fine. As you say, things have changed.
All right. So listen, you two come here to make us laugh a little bit this morning. I'm not expecting you to do routines and jokes. We're going to just talk shit, but there's a lot going on in the country this morning. There are people gathering all over in little groups, and maybe they'll become bigger groups, and I don't know if you're planning to join any of this stuff.
I've got to tell you, I felt a little bit intimidated coming to work today because there was no traffic and people were standing the entire route like on the side of the road.
Really?
Yeah.
So you've seen people already?
So people already out and protesting. Yeah, I felt a little bit guilty, you know, like coming and doing some work this morning.
I just want to say to the public, guys, you forgot to tell your domestic workers and your gardeners that there's a march today. I saw them going to work. Guys, please call them and tell them.
No, but the plan is that you take your domestic worker and your gardener and your security guard with you. You all protest together. We'll start in Saxonwold and we'll go to Melrose Arch. And then we can have a frappuccino at the end of it.
And have a cappuccino, frappuccino, and a latte.
Tembi's like,
I don't want to be here.
All right, but we've got to stop our shit, right? Because we always see ourselves in this nation as being in silos. We realize in rare occasions of national unity, and they really are rare, that we have much more in common than we do that separates us. But, Jesus, people are full of it. I mean, I was listening to yesterday on social media. You should have heard all the crap. There was someone from the SACP who was saying they'll go and march, but they don't want the people from Save SA there. Then the people from Save SA said, no, they're not sure if they want the people from Outer there. Then the Outer people are saying, well, they don't want COSATU there. And then Zwelinzima Mavavi is saying it's good that Bantu Holomisa joins. But what about this one?
This is exactly what Justice warned us about yesterday. Do you remember?
But the strange thing is that all of these organizations have the letters SA in it. All of them have South Africa. And it's like, why are you fighting for your own personal? Isn't it a South African thing, like a nation thing?
I think you're making a mistake if you expect your politicians to be national and care about other people. Like politicians, they don't start out in a career of politics. You don't go into politics thinking, I'm going to become leader of the country. I'm going to be the best person. Everyone's going to look up to me because you're a nice person. You go into that job because you're an asshole. And it's quite simply like the fact that every single politician is out for themselves. It doesn't matter if they're pretending to work for the DA or the EFF or the ANC. They're all assholes.
Yeah, and somehow they've managed to like get us to pay for them.
Isn't it weird?
It is
so
ridiculous.
How do we, when we know that they're assholes, how do we end up being bamboozled into paying for them?
Because we're too apathetic to go and buy rope anymore. We can't get in a mob and grab our torches.
I think we need ropes and paraffin.
That's right. We need to finish this old school.
We just need paraffin, guys. I know a guy who sells paraffin for 5 rand. Let's just.
Let's go there. Yeah. Maybe he'll be in the march today. Who knows? Well, listen to Rusty. This guy says, I suffer from severe social anxiety, but I want to add my voice today. I just don't know where to start. I took leave. Now what? Do I just drive towards Bayers Nordea and look for people burning shit and join in? Do I bring Molotov cocktails or will they be provided?
No, I think you need to bring coffee because it's quite cold. I don't know. I think Jacob Zuma has strong sangomas.
I don't think we get anything provided for us.
I saw one of my friends who is a pro-Zuma guy. I mean, he's in the minority. I got to you know, tell it. But it's brave of him. He's like, ah, that rain will take care of this.
But it will. It will. If there's one thing you know, South Africans don't go to shit in the rain.
Yeah, like, no. We care too much about our hair. That's
well, you know, the truth is, though, that if nothing else, it would be nice if we actually showed, like, what people really want. Because everybody sits in their little groups. We first of all break down into race, then we break down into tribe, then we break down into family, then we break down into like-minded people, and we live in these bubbles.
Yeah.
So we never talk to each other. And you always think, well, we're the only ones who feel that way. There are a lot of people in this country who have a lot in common in terms of what they want to happen to this president and this government. Lots. Yeah.
But we've also got a lot of people who are interested in keeping us divided.
You know, well,
keep
of course.
On telling us, no, we don't want Outer here. We don't want the SACP here. We don't want
the same
here,
people you know? who would like to keep being paid by the Guptas.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Have you guys got any nice Gupta gigs lately?
Yeah, guys.
They must, they must need a comedian.
Yo, listen, I'm rolling in that Gupta money.
Oh, are you?
Shut up, because they're going to hear about this and then they'll say, ah.
And not sponsor me anymore.
They'll stop sponsoring you. Really, that would be a very bad thing for you, Lisa.
No, but you know people are standing up against the current government, because even David Cowell is saying bad stuff about the ANC.
Yeah. It's the only one who we still really need to explain economy to, because I think he thinks that what he's earning now he'll earn forever, is AKA.
Yeah.
Someone needs to sit him down and go, look, the ANC money's going to dry up, bro.
Yeah.
You're not going to get that money for those political
AKA
I don't broke. I don't think Kiernan cares. I don't think he cares about where his money's coming from. He went to St. John's, man. That guy was rich.
Yeah, and now he's pretending he cares about fees must fall. And he's like, he's saying all these things. Like, he's really trying hard to convince us that he's in the working class.
Dude, you
can't be in the working class and then make these music videos where you're popping bottles of, like, what's that stuff called?
We don't even know, Gareth. That's
so expensive.
We don't even know. We have no idea. Yeah,
shit. It's one thing to be like Anton Rupert's son and be carrying on like that, because that's what you'd expect.
That's what you can expect from him, but AKA.
And now that Bonang hasn't got a job at Metro, he's the breadwinner. we gotta be careful here. AKA really needs to just watch what he's saying.
Just be careful. Your money is at stake.
Maybe he's looked at this and gone, oh, look, now I've got a plan for the family. You know, I've got to take the money when I can get it.
The irony of all of this is that I don't think, I mean, even Lesejo, one of our guys, was in a voice clip I played earlier saying, yeah, he doesn't think this is going to affect poor people and the middle classes so much. Those are exactly the people that affect.
That is affecting. Yeah.
Rich people
don't
give a shit.
Don't get,
so they make,
they make
1.5 million less off their 500 million rand investment. They don't care about that.
They don't care.
They're so used to the stock market going up and down, they could care less. And they've got money.
What's another million?
They've got money in this country and money in that country.
What's another million?
Right. Middle class people like us, we're paying the taxes. We're keeping people keeping the government going. And all of that money is being spent in corruption. We hear about these SASSA grants, which almost didn't go out. There was such a disaster there because this Batabile Dlamini couldn't care less. Yeah, she couldn't care less about this department she's meant to run. Those poor people are going to be the first ones to suffer when the government runs out of money.
Yeah.
Because who's going to give them money?
Because who's going to give them money? The rich people are going to say, not a fuck am I doing that.
And people think it'll just carry on ticking over the way that it has. Every cent you earn now is worth less than any cent you earned before. And it should be more, because inflation's going up, interest's going up. This is not rocket science.
Yes. Yeah, but look, as Malusi Kigaba said, you know, I mean, if the Guptas can come to this country with a suitcase full of clothes and make them successes of themselves, like, what's wrong with the rest of us, Sam?
Yeah.
Why didn't we buy out Jacob Zuma? It was so obvious.
What's wrong is we're paying over 20% of tax. That's what's wrong.
What's wrong is we don't have the right connections. We're not connected to the right people.
What's wrong is we're not from India. That's the wrong thing.
No, you know what it was? We looked at this wrong. We missed the business opportunity. We saw that Jacob Zuma was pliable when he was talking to Sheikh. We saw it. It was
and we should have taken the gas.
We should have all lunged at it and started paying for
him. We should have gone to him and said, Sholozi, listen, if we pull together, we can give you a lot more than the Sheikhs or the
Guptas.
We missed out.
We'll give you... I mean, right now, I would be prepared to go to him, knock on the door of his office, say, I'm not here to protest, relax, put down your mshiniwam. And I'll say to him, Mr. President, I'll get a bunch of people together. We'll give you $1 million a month. That's a lot more than your presidential salary.
Yeah.
$1 million a month.
That's it.
But you must go away.
Yeah, you must go to Uganda and never come out.
We'll let you keep that too.
Keep your big hut. Keep
anything you want. Build another one if you want to. $1 million a month just to
fuck off. But you see what kind of point we've reached now. We want to negotiate with this guy. We want to tell him that, no, here's your house. Keep it. Like,
keep your house.
We should be fed keep you the your paraffin bullshit, and just the tires, leave. Man. We used to know how to deal with this problem.
Paraffin,
we knew how to deal
You're
with this
You're talking treason now. This is the kind of shit that can get you arrested. I want you guys to go to jail.
I'm not saying what we're going to do with that shit.
No one is saying anything. I just have paraffin in my hand.
Yeah.
I mean, Khalema Mutlante this morning speaking out, and Joel Netshitenze, and then someone sent me a picture of the citizen from exactly a year ago today. These people were already saying, please go, Zuma, a year ago.
A year ago.
Let's see who they are. Ahmed Katrada, who's now passed. Zwelinzi Mavavi, Ronnie Kazrals, Trevor Manuel, Dennis Goldberg, Frenny Jinwala,
what?
A former speaker. Mavuso Msimang, was he related to you?
Yeah, he's my G.
There we go. Prince Mashele, who's written the most incredible article. I don't know if you've seen that being passed around as well. Sipiwe Nyanda, he used to be the chief of the Defense Force.
And all
and
of these guys.
He used to support Jacob Zuma. These are people who a year ago already knew this was bad.
But how many of those guys have been sidelined now? How many
Zach,
of those guys?
All of them.
How many
Zach
times have you heard Coop, of Trevor
all
of them.
Cheryl Carolus. Ronald Lamola.
Yeah. These all of them are sidelined now.
Yeah. Where are they?
They're all gone.
They're all gone. He was just like, oh, you want me to go? Okay. You go first.
He doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't give a fuck.
you could tell he couldn't give a shit. He's got a lot of money, right? He's a baller. He's got a shitload of money. And he still hasn't bought a pair of glasses that fit him.
Sheesh.
Like, that guy doesn't care about anything. Not a thing.
The president and the Guptas are going to wake up this morning. And to them, they're going to have the most pleasant, enjoyable day. No stress.
Probably going to have tea together
no
at
worries.
Like 10 o'clock and say, let's watch this nonsense together.
Like, for them, life is just going to continue today.
Yeah.
Like normal.
That's them waking up.
What is happening in the news today?
Oh. Let's watch ANN7 to find out the truth.
Ah, the
My
people
channel.
Really like me.
Baleka. Hi, Baleka. How are you?
I'm just waking up, too. What would you like me to do in Parliament next week?
Well, I was thinking it might be a good idea if you warn those MPs that they're going to have to show their hands is not a secret ballot.
Okay.
Ah, you're stupid.
I've got literally one problem with that impersonation.
What?
Is that you imply that Baleka's on the other end of a telephone instead of in bed?
In
next
bed.
To him.
Oh.
He's not sleeping. Don't be disparaging now. You can say a lot of things about our president, but he's not sleeping with every woman in the ANC.
No, I didn't say every woman. I think every person in the ANC. I don't think that guy gives a damn.
You mean they're
he's
in,
a rock
they're
in bed with him.
Oh, sorry, yes. That's what I meant.
That's what we need.
Because what we do know for sure is that at least one of the women who is regularly in bed with him, or was his one wife, tried to poison him.
Yeah.
So people fucking hate him.
How shitty of a human being are you?
Your own wife.
Your own wife is like, fuck this shit.
Put
I
stuff
am...
in your soup.
I want the money, just not you. That's... Jeez. Oh, that's
but they're not divorced yet, are they?
She's not
living there, but they're not divorced.
She was moved out away, far away from him onto a separate location. Remember, there were also rumors that she was getting down with the bodyguard.
Well, I would too.
I've seen that.
I mean, come on.
We all have needs.
Sheesh. He's out here shagging Guptas. What am I supposed to do? I'm going to do the security guard. I won't lie.
You know what I do like about South Africans is that everybody who is going to protest today is going to have such a party tonight.
Yes.
You
get
that,
drunk
right?
and drink
off.
All the tequilas.
Every bar, every pub, every shebeen, everyone's going to be patting themselves on the back.
We did it.
You'll see Zwelinzi Mavavi and Bantu Holomisa standing next to each other like, yeah, we did it.
We did it.
Julius and Musi. I do like the fact that all these opposition parties have decided to put aside their differences for today. I mean, if we can learn anything from these politicians, it's that.
They put aside their differences, and now Musi Maimane and Julius Malema are going to be puking afterwards from those drinks together toilet.
Who do you think is feeding Julius his information? Because he's got a lot of inside stuff.
So much information.
And it must be coming from inside the
Julius?
It is.
He's got a mole.
Yeah.
And the mole is not just in the NEC or the NWC. It's close to the president.
It's close, no?
Yeah, because he was able to predict that Gwede would do an about turn on his lack bravery.
What do you think it must take to be that person in the ANC who's watching what's going on? You're in there, you're pretending to be the guy for the president and all that stuff, and then you're passing on the stuff to Julius. I mean, if you get caught, yes.
That and this guy, or this mole, must be some kind of brilliant, because, you know, Julius has been predicting things for a long time. I mean, wasn't he one of the first people to warn us about the Guptas?
Yes.
About this family.
He was.
And this was a long time ago.
Even before he set up EFF.
Yes.
He warned us about this.
No.
And we're like, Julius, you're stupid. You are crazy.
But there's exactly
no such
one
thing.
Of two
and
people.
And then 2 years later.
I mean, really, it's not going to be any in the NEC who support Jacob Zuma. It's not going to be Gwede Mantashe, because he hasn't been exactly very polite about Gwede Mantashe.
No.
So it's either got to be Cyril Ramaphosa.
Or Zweli Mkhize.
It was Zweli Mkhize, yeah.
No, but that's high up.
What if it's the new finance minister?
What if? I had this theory the other day, and everybody kind of laughed at me because I have nothing to back it up. But that Malusi Gigaba is actually not pro-Zuma, but he was moved into the finance ministry because they want to destroy him.
He's a young guy.
People were tapping him as the next possible either deputy president, president, because they know Nkosasana is going to probably come in, right?
Yeah.
And she's going to need a deputy. So who's going to be the deputy? And it needs to be someone pliable. But they were thinking he's on the rise. He's one of the few young people in the ANC, because most of the old fuckers.
Yeah.
He's one of the few young people. He's very worldly. He's not a bad guy. He's got good PR. You know, he's got. He seems to be one of the people in the ANC who, up to now, everybody had something good to say about. Well, now if they put him in finance and he destroys that and he gives them the key to the treasury, then he's destroyed. His reputation is finished. Then he has no political career.
Look,
that's actually a good theory.
The problem is that there are so many theories, and this is where we also get confused and we become exasperated. I mean, I thought that initially the president wanted Brian Molefe, but then he couldn't get Brian Molefe in there because apparently he was resisted. He was met with too much resistance. So I just thought Malusi Gigaba was like the next best thing. He was like, okay, well, I can't get my guy in. Who am I going to get? Okay, just put that one in there. It's fine. We don't care what happens
but
to
Malusi
him.
But Malusi says all the right stuff. He says, no, I'm not here to question. I'm just here to do.
I'm here to comply.
I'm just gonna do
he actually used the word comply.
Yeah.
We get
I'm
the
here
call.
To comply.
We comply. He was apparently not even – the first thing he heard was when the president announced it to everyone. He didn't know. There was no warning. Which makes you think the president's just like moving shit around.
But it's like
he's, redecorating his house.
It's like he's spring cleaning it.
Take this vase and put it in the dining room.
And the wife is like, what the fuck? Yeah.
But Fikile Mbalula was exactly the same. He made an announcement on Twitter that, no, this is nonsense.
Yeah, Fikile found out on black Twitter. How about that?
Yeah.
How about that?
The president really makes his people look like idiots is what he does.
Like, no, guys, I'm still swagging with the sports.
Because even Pravin Gordhan says, like, a lot of the stuff he discovered through the media, because nothing was ever communicated to him.
Oh, jeez.
I'm surprised Fikile found anything out on Twitter. I thought he blocked everyone.
Guys, we all know
everyone.
Things don't get decided.
That's where his fan base is. Twitter love Fikile Mbalula.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. His following isn't so huge. His following is not that huge. And people, only the ones I've seen retweeting him are like people who are desperate to like get some hands on that sport money. Because he spends money left, right, and center on stupid award ceremonies and stuff. Anyway, the point is, we all know that the real decisions don't get made at union buildings, cabinet. No. Gets made at Sachsenwald, man. The Shebeen. Remember Brian Molefe? Remember they triangulated his position? They checked on where the cell phone towers were. He said there was a Shebeen, but it was the Gupta house. There's something going on there.
Oh,
that's where
man.
The shit happened.
I've been down that street. Like,
have you seen the house?
Look, Yeah, I've seen the house. The properties are massive. There could be a Shabin there. I don't know. Like, I mean, we're all denouncing Brian Molefe. We're all saying, there's no Shabin here. But there really could be. Those properties are massive.
Also,
it's a proper party. Like,
also, isn't it very difficult to see into the actual space?
Yeah, the walls are high.
Exactly.
Security is ready to pounce on you.
Apparently, there were military vehicles parked there yesterday.
Well, that was because a group of white Saxon old residents went and stood outside Gupta residences.
This is where the Guptas live. This is where they live. Come and stand by their gate.
And then the black people are like, so are we going to go in?
No, we're just going to stand here. So stand and do what? Just stand and protest. But we must ban. No.
Ban tires. Bring the
we
tires.
We can't just stand here, man.
They're tanks outside. You know?
This is a very, very cool time to be around. Like, you know, we have a lot of young people in this country. I always talk about this kind of sarcastically. Like, there are a lot of young people in South Africa, white and black, who have struggle envy. Like, they hear about the stories of heroism, and we hear about these people who came before us and generations before us.
I just want to just, you know, just...
But I use Twitter for my struggle. But actually, now finally, you're presented with an opportunity, right?
To do exactly what they did in the past.
Right. I'm desperately afraid we're going to be on these shows, we're going to be making these jokes, and we're going to be talking about this. And meanwhile, this is the moment. Everybody's going to go, that day, that's the day we could have thrown him out. We didn't. And now we've got Robert Mugabe Mark II.
Let's talk a little bit about you two, because you're not here for your health. I mean, you must have a bunch of stuff going on all at the same time. And I know that you both are very much in demand. We're doing this thing this month where we're talking to comedians, and Lihle Msimang, Warren Robertson, are here with us today. Both of you have interesting life stories. So let's start with you, Warren. Where the hell are you from?
Oh, well, my life story is not all that interesting, particularly to me. But I'm from Johannesburg, grew up in Johannesburg. I've lived in Barberton and Pietermaritzburg.
Where? Barberton?
Barberton, yeah.
Yes,
I'm so sorry.
No,
where
it
is?
Was a massive
tell
mistake.
Me about Barberton.
Yeah, Barberton, I got a contract to go up there and work there that I had to go and live there.
What contract?
It was to write social labor plans for the mines.
Yes, that's boring.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Dude, how did you... There is no way you could be as funny as you are and have done that for
Barberton
a job.
Barberton was an interesting town, hey? Because the first thing I saw as you drive into the main street of Barberton was two kind of shabby homeless guys and an 11-year-old school kid bouncing a cigarette. And I say cigarette because I'm not 100% certain that was tobacco, you know.
Sure.
So that was that town, I reckon, has probably got more bottle stores per capita than anywhere else in the country. I mean, there must be about a dozen bottle stores in a grid of four streets by four
That's
streets.
Terrible.
It's
like what the white Americans did to the American Indians. They used to put them in these reserves. They'd say, this is your land, blah, 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 blah. But they have these horrible towns. Four-way stop. On this side, they'd have a liquor store. On the other side, they'd have a gun store. On the other side, they'd have a funeral parlor. And that's kind of how, that's what would happen. I mean, it's so cynical. Can you believe that?
Man.
But that's actually what happens. And in these little towns.
Go drink, get angry, shoot yourself up, and then get buried.
Barberton doesn't have a gun store because everyone would kill themselves. Like, everyone. Like, it's not even a problem.
Now, I remember in 2012, I know it's a long time ago, but you suddenly made the biggest splash when you had the sellout show at the Grahamstown Festival. Everybody was talking about you then, and they haven't stopped talking about you since.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
But that was good stuff. It was called Spamily, right?
That's right. Yeah, it was about an American family who somehow tagged me on their family newsletter, and I landed up getting all their family messages and mails and stuff back and forth to one another, and I started like reading these mails, and it was about me comparing myself with the oldest son, who was 10 years younger than me and just an achiever, you know, just one of these guys who just like everything he
way
did
more successful
right,
than you.
Yeah, way more successful than me. So the show was basically about what what the fuck up I am and. And yeah, it went well. That particular show went well, and since then, as you say, it's been on the up.
But being a comic in the beginning is a really tough thing. I mean, you have to cut your teeth on some pretty shitty gigs, and you have to stand up in front of corporate crowds, and they just don't care about laughing, and they're not really there to be – they're for some award, or they're there for the free dinner. Yeah. Who knows? But it's a damn hard job. And even if you're in a club where people have come to laugh, and they're in the mood, and maybe they're a bit drunk, even there – their attitude is, well, okay, make me laugh. And you go up the first time, and it's frightening.
Well, yeah, the first time it's frightening. But, you know, the thing is, you say we used to do that. We still do that, you know, like it's still the thing.
You never know, right?
But it's the way that you write your material is you take it, you take your idea and you present it to these drunks and these, you know, these people who have no idea that you're coming. And if you can make those guys laugh, you better believe that you're going to stand up in front of a corporate crowd and make them laugh. You know, that's what.
You did Edinburgh.
Yes, I did Edinburgh.
How did that go?
That was an interesting experience because I just basically went to Edinburgh.
So you weren't on the bill or anything?
No, I went to, well, I'll tell you what happened. I went to London and then I just caught a train up to Edinburgh and I was like, I'm just going to stay there. And I booked a room in a dorm and I went and I did a couple of late night shows. You know, I just kind of knocked on people's door and said, listen, I'm going to do some late night shows. And they said, yeah, okay, you can have 5 minutes because it's 3 a.m. and everyone's drunk and nobody gives a damn. And from there, I ended up getting a bunch of spots on other main kind of proper shows, the Late and Live. I did, you know, I ended up performing with some of the best comedians in the world at that point. Like, just at Edinburgh because I was there, you know, and hustling. And
that's incredible.
Yeah, it really worked out very, very
nicely.
Yeah.
And people liked it?
Yeah, it went well enough that, look, I mean, I was hanging out at the library bar, which is like a hidden comedians bar in Edinburgh with, and I kid you know, Tim Minchin and Stephen Jeez. K. Amos and, you know, like big Dude. Proper Richard Herring and big proper names.
El Proges said that you were the most pyrotechnic mind in South African comedy. That's a hell of a compliment or an insult, depending, right? What do you think he meant?
I'm taking it very firmly as a compliment.
He likes you. He's a friend.
He took me on my very first, the very first person to ever put me on a tour, on a nationwide tour. I went around and I opened for him on back in the day, and so I think he likes me. I think that's a good thing.
That's cool. You see that Dave Levinson's just walked in. He's trying to look cool too. You guys all know each other, right? It's like a fraternity.
No, we don't know Dave. Who the fuck is Dave?
Exactly. He's got a show of his own here, believe it or not.
Yeah, I know.
Lisa, what about you? You won that Nando's thing in 2011.
Yes.
Like you were the what do they always call it? The breakout comedy act.
The breakout comedy act, yes. Yeah. So funny enough with that, that was the first time I started doing comedy in that year. Mm. And I was doing comedy, like that was my fourth, if not fifth, performance ever in my life. Ever. Jesus. Yeah.
How do you know you're funny? I mean, I sometimes think, I would really be I don't have the balls to go and stand up in front of a crowd and try to make them laugh. How do you know you're funny? Did people say to you, you've got to do this?
Yeah, that's what people said to me. They said, actually, a friend of mine in varsity said to me, because I was doing my fourth year in 2011.
What were you studying?
I was studying filmmaking.
Okay. So thank God you got a real job. Your parents would have still been supporting
you. Like, oh my gosh, when are you getting an office job? Come on.
Yeah?
Assuming that my parents are white.
oh, I thought so. Simung is a very well-known
It's a very well-known
surname in English circles.
Yeah, I mean, it's straight from the Queen.
It's Queen Elizabeth Msimang. In case people don't know.
A friend of mine dared me to do comedy, and I said, okay, I'll do it if you do it. So both of us took to the stage. No one laughed at him, and people laughed at what I had to say because I was just up there talking about
it. Feels good.
I was like,
you feel sorry for him, but you kind
like,
of...
Like, oh, sorry, man. Yeah.
It sounds like you're really good friends.
By the way, do you guys prefer if someone terrible goes on before you or if someone really good goes on before you? Because it's a good and bad situation.
Someone good. Yeah,
because then they hide
the crowd.
Yeah,
then the energy's there. Somebody's terrible there. You've got to pick the crowd up, convince them that you're not terrible too. Yeah, it's like it's work. It's much easier to go out when the room's cooking.
Lisa, you've also done New York.
Yeah.
That's
the epicenter of comedy, yeah. So I was at Greenwich Comedy Club, New York Comedy Strip. I was at the Comedy Cellar. So the Comedy Cellar has two rooms.
There's these are the like main hallowed.
Room. Yeah.
These are the like, churches these of are comedy. Like,
I did the boardwalk. It was so amazing being there. And when I got there, initially I was just like getting... like small spots, and they were like, "Oh no, come in, buy a drink and perform." And I'm like, "I can buy a drink and perform." And so easy. And then, from there, like people started saying, "No, come to this, come to that, come to this." It's to a point where some of them are calling me and saying, "When you come back, let us know. We'll put you on a lineup." Yeah.
But that's spectacular because you at those places you don't know who might pitch up.
Yeah.
And you never know who might be on after or before you. Could be Jerry Seinfeld.
It could be Chris Rock.
Yeah.
It could be Trevor Noah.
It could. And those are some of the people who do perform at these things regularly. I love the fact that all those guys, by the way, still do.
They still go and perform stand-up comedy, which is amazing.
Stand-up is not something you can just let slide. It's a little bit like golf. You've got to be continuously practicing it. Otherwise, you get rusty and horrible and terrible. And you've got to be writing new material and making new jokes and making new stuff. And the only way that you do that is by getting out and performing.
Do you test your stuff out on these audiences in little bits, or do you go with a whole new act and just say, I'm going to just see what happens?
No, little bit.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You don't want to take 1 hour of crap and just put it out there.
Okay, so how does your, like with a musician, I'm always fascinated in how they come up with a great riff or they come up with a great melody or whatever it is. And it might be in the shower. It might be while they're driving. You never know. With you guys, what is your individual
alcohol
process? You get drunk, Warren?
I get drunk with my friends, and then whatever they remember me saying, what they remember me saying the next day.
You're constantly phoning them, like, tell me what I said that was funny.
I know I blacked out yesterday. What happened?
That thing you spoke about last week with this thing. I've been thinking about it. You should do that.
And then do you remember? Because I would have to write down.
I remember pieces of it, and then you kind of. And the thing is that telling it in a club to your friends is very different to standing up on stage. You've got to craft it anyway, but at least now you've got the idea and you've got the kind of
and you can sort of spoon feed the audience.
If you just made sure that your phone is always 100%, you could just record your sessions now.
I'm hearing you, and I'm hearing professionalism.
Yeah, but it's
just not the way I work.
Comedians are not professional.
It depends where you are, because if you're in a place that's really noisy, you won't get a good recording anyway.
Yeah, well, for all I know, I'm going to tell myself that, but it's literally because I don't remember to do that. I don't like. There are comedians who are obsessive about it. They're driving cars and then they here's an idea for a joke and they record it on their phone or whatever.
I can't do that either.
So, Lisa, how do you do yours?
I just think of something, and if I have a pen, I write it down. If I don't, I go, I'm going to forget.
That's the other thing. I've forgotten so many jokes.
Yeah.
Like,
and then,
stuff that worked for, 6 months, and then now I've
And then
totally
it's like,
forgotten.
I forgot. What was the punchline again? I forgot.
Do you ever keep, like, an archive of, if someone films, you've both done TV stuff.
Yeah.
You've both done, whether it's audio stuff, podcasts, recordings, people who come to the shows and illegally record you.
For me, my archive is the people who follow me, because I genuinely, with that show's family, I closed that show on a joke I'd totally forgotten about until somebody came up to me and went, that joke you tell about getting engaged is amazing. And I was like, what joke? What joke do I tell? Tell me that thing. And then they told me the joke. I was like, that's brilliant. It's ending my show.
Are you ever worried that the alcohol's becoming a problem?
No, it's not. That's not alcohol. That's just my brain.
But you know what I mean. You've got to be on top of these things.
Also, if alcohol's a problem, then that's fine. I'm in a career where that's okay.
I mentioned last week to these guys who were in here that I saw Stanhope in Austin, Texas. Now, he's been drinking and taking every kind of drug under the sun for the longest time.
And
He's as funny as ever. He seems to be doing a great job. He's making money.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can. You can live without having to worry about that.
Yeah, as long as you show up for your gigs and you're on time. And
you're not late for your AA meeting. You know,
That's what it comes down to. But, so the alcohol's not a problem. It may be excessive, but it's not a problem.
No. The actual thing
is not a
problem.
You are handling it just fine, so it's not a problem.
I'm drunk right now. But I'm trying to understand Butterbili Dlamini.
You and Butterbili Dlamini, you speak the same language.
Same
we both have
They're
alcohol
the same
for breakfast.
Thing.
She should be on the comedy circuit.
she shouldn't say anything.
Hello,
just stand there.
I'm Butterbili.
And then, that chick is amazing.
I'm fucked now, but wait a couple of minutes. That'd be very funny.
We want more.
your Butterbili sounds awfully like Desmond Tutu, which is weird.
This month, I don't know if they're poor, they're going to get their money.
Imagine. God, what a country we live in.
All right, it's beautiful.
But Lisa, you've also done some acting.
Proper, not funny, yes.
do you like doing that stuff? Is it as much fun?
It depends on the set. So it's as much fun if the people on the set are fun people. But if everyone is serious, then I want to slit my wrist. But
because you're not getting the immediate feedback that you get from stand-up.
Yeah, it's not. You get it much later when the edit is done, and then they go, oh my gosh, this thing that you acted in. And it's like, okay, I had to wait 3 weeks to get that. Whereas in comedy, it's I'm getting it now.
Yeah.
You're telling me I'm great now. You're telling me I'm shit now.
That's the good part about it is you ride that wave, and it's a live thing. It happens there and then. It's very energetic. But the shitty side of it is that you usually are doing this in front of douchebags who will also let you know if they hate you.
Like, get off the fucking stage.
Have you had that happen?
Not get off the fucking stage, but I've had I've had people say, you're not funny.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Tell us something funny.
Hecklers suck.
Oh. But no, but look, the thing
Do you
is,
like playing with them?
Yeah, as a comedian, it's wonderful to be able to deal with those people from the stage. Because if you were in a bar, they'd still be an asshole to you. But you couldn't say anything back because then they'd hit you. Whereas now you're on the stage and you've got the microphone and you've got the power.
That's a good
point. So you get to tell this guy exactly where to go.
Hey, Marvis, that's nice. I like that. It gives you a sort of a power over them that they don't
and
realize.
And you can't hit me because everyone is watching you.
I got hit in a club once. This is a good story. I was at the Blueberry Grill, which is mentioned in Mandy Wiener's book Killing Kebble.
It's because, like, where all these gangsters used
to go. It was where the Elite Bouncer Agency used to hang out.
Who's from the hood here? You or me? Like,
but I used to host a comedy show there every 2 weeks, and the guys used to come, all the Elite Bouncer Agency guys, and they'd come and they'd hang out there. The one week.
Oh, you're gonna make us laugh tonight,
Almost exactly like that. And there was a guy who was relatively new to the agency, sitting down the front, and he brought his girlfriend and his girlfriend's parents, and then he spent the entire night talking. So I just eventually I started hammering him, and he stood up and took it, you know, the way that a bouncer would take that kind of thing. And he said, "You say one more word, but I'm gonna go backstage and I'm gonna fuck you up." And I was like, well, I'm hosting the show, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring on the headline act, Chris Forrest, and I'm going to go backstage to get fucked up. And he went, and he went backstage.
Oh, you can't.
I was like, okay, so ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your headline act, Chris Forrest. And I went, hand mic over, I went backstage, and I couldn't see the guy. And I looked around, and he came out from behind a bookshelf, and he rugby tackled me into the bathroom and hit me as I was going down. And then he didn't hit me again, and I couldn't work out why he wasn't hitting me. And his friend was there, and they had me. They could have beaten the hell out of me. They weren't. And then I realized that Chris Forrest had come backstage with a mic and was commentating. And the next thing...
What a douchebag Chris Forrest is.
No, but the next thing, the management were there and they dragged these two young guys out, and they had a stern talking to them, I think, because after that, the guy was basically groveling an apology to Chris and I. He was buying us drinks for the rest of the evening. We got so drunk that Chris's wife phoned me the next morning and said, I heard you got punched in the club last night. And I said, yeah. She said, ask me how I know. I said, okay, how do you know? She says, Chris told me. 4 times.
Oh, man.
Oh, jeez.
How about these crowds in South Africa, though? You mentioned the boys on the East Rand, but you could end up with like an Indian crowd, only Indian people. And the sense of humor is maybe a little bit different because culturally we're a little bit different.
Yeah.
So are you guys able to just adjust to whatever, or do you go in with the same set and just deliver it same way?
You have to be able to adjust.
Yeah.
You have to. Cause
how do you read that, though? Because that's the real skill of a comedian. You could be very funny, but you could be shitty on stage.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, for me, it's the first couple jokes that you tell.
Yeah.
I throw out one that's kind of dirty, one that's kind of smart, one that's, you know, and I sort of use those as
waypoints. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I know which of my material will fit for that crowd.
If you throw in a dirty joke and they go,
yeah, then you know.
Then you know. Just keep it dirty. Or if you throw in a smart one and they go and they scream, it's
or if
it's
it goes over their head, then
yeah. Okay. You just gauge.
It goes over their head a lot more often than I would like, I'll be honest.
So you don't like bring up jokes about Hegel and Immanuel Kant and
when I first started, that was the kind of stuff I was writing. You know, these kind of like heavy intellectual jokes, and I realized I was getting no gigs.
Yeah,
so now a lot of my jokes are about wanking. You know, that's
we don't know Jon Snow. We don't know Jon Snow. What's Jon Snow?
That's what people want.
Okay, do you like social media or do you hate it?
Love hate.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like it's necessary, but...
Very political answer.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's a necessary thing, but I don't enjoy being there. Like, I don't enjoy it anymore. Like, when I first started...
It's like going to the office that you don't like going to.
That's right, Joe.
Having meetings with people you don't actually want to be there.
That's right, Joe. When I first started out on Twitter, it was fun. It felt like a little bit like you were talking to everybody, and everybody knew each other, and you were sharing ideas, and now it just feels everybody's talking at each other.
And they pile on, right?
Yeah, and they're looking for something to be offended about.
It's like, I'm going to go on Twitter, and I'm going to be offended. And then when you see the trends are just happy things, you start trying to find what's unhappy about the happy thing.
I had a delightful moment quite early. I've been on Twitter for about a year, and the St. Francis burnt down. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, when all of the houses, the whole thatched roof. Yeah. Community
That's
of
right.
St. Francis.
And it was all over the front pages of newspapers.
Even though no people were hurt because they're all holiday homes.
That's right. And I had the temerity to say, listen, media, you guys need to chill the fuck out, because the only reason you care is because these are expensive rich people's homes.
Yeah.
Whereas X number
well,
of,
just the other
of,
day,
you know, shack fires happened.
In Zamayetu, burnt down in Heart Bay, and people were like, oh, well.
That's right.
I said that, but... You know, it's
it
not
happens,
as bad
you know?
As in France.
It happened.
Yeah, that's right. So I said that, and I said it in a series of tweets. And one of the tweets was just like, you know, we only care about St. Francis because rich people burn down or something, the media. And Mandy Wiener only retweeted that bit. She kind of pulled just one tweet out. And
she
I woke up the
thread.
Next morning, and I had something like, you know, 1,000 messages of people telling me exactly where to go and fuck myself.
Yeah.
And I literally spent that morning just sitting answering to everyone saying, do me a favor, read the rest of the link. And then after that, I was like, fuck this thing.
Now, whenever that happens, I'm just like, you can choose to see the whole thing. Or not.
Yeah.
And is it worth defending yourself on that? Because nobody actually even listens after they've made their point, they have already moved on.
Well, this was the very first time this kind of happened to me. You know, like, I'm sure the first time somebody, like 1,000 people told you what a fucking asshole you were,
Garrett,
you probably felt it a little more sternly than you do
now. There's one of our listeners called Cindy who was tweeting last night. So I put out this very, it's not ambiguous, but it's kind of a very general tweet about whatever you're doing tomorrow, you know, just do it or shut up, because the people who are not doing anything, you don't have to weigh in on this. We know that you're a douchebag who has your own principles and ideas and blah, blah, blah. So I just said, the time is now. Whatever that means for you, send your message out. Do it clearly. Right?
Yeah.
So this one guy replies. So Cindy replies, and she's like, good luck, because she lives in Ireland.
Okay.
She listens to us in Ireland every day. She goes, good luck to you guys. You know, love South Africa, blah, blah, blah. So some dude supports Zuma or whatever. He comes on. He's like, we will win. You give us the land. And I'm like, douchebag. I went on because I was just annoyed. You know, sometimes you forget to be the better man.
Yeah, fuck this.
Cindy doesn't even live here. She doesn't have land here. She's an island, you fucking retard. And the guy's like, but. And then he just trails off into nowhere. And I know he doesn't care. I know she doesn't care. I know I don't care. So why
no
do we
one
even
cares.
Bother?
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
So
nobody
these
cares.
People who are out there this morning, they care. They actually give a damn.
Yeah.
That's why they're out there and they're not
the rain,
on Twitter.
And I know it's also easy to like go after the Santon housewives or the bankers and Investec are going to be across the road at the McDonald's. Good for them. I don't see any reason why those people's voice is not as important as the voice of someone who's been victimized for 30, 40, 50 years. I think everybody in this country has a right to say what they want to say and do what they want to do. And otherwise, how would you know you're free?
Yeah. And today, for once, we're all fighting for the same thing.
Exactly.
For the same thing. You come from different backgrounds. You come from different, you have your own ideas and all own opinions, but it's all for the same thing.
I just realized every day for Jacob Zuma is my St. Francis day. Like every day his Twitter account must just be people telling him where to go and fuck himself.
I think like, so. Like that should, that's how it should be. We must make
here's
this
a dildo, put it up your ass.
I don't think the president really gives a shit about social media at all.
No, I don't,
but you know,
I don't see him going.
Canthan Pillay says this morning, and he's one of the voices of reason on social media, if there is such a thing. He said, when we marched in the 1980s, we didn't give a shit if it was legal or not.
Yeah.
You got all these people now saying, is the march legal?
Is it legal? I don't want to get it. Criminal record.
Isn't there a page in the Constitution that says that protest cannot be illegal?
Well, let me read it to you quickly, because this is quite interesting what you raise. Someone sent me the right section of the Constitution, believe it or not, where it actually addresses this very point. And it is section Chapter 2, Section 17, everyone has the right, peacefully and unarmed, to assemble, to demonstrate, to picket, and to present petitions.
Right.
Well, peacefully and unarmed.
And Chapter 2, Section 18, just after that, is everyone has the right to freedom of association. So that means if you are SACP, but you don't want to be with the Save SA people, then you can just, you'd be in the same march, but you'd be a separate part of the march. Yeah. You know, there's enough space for everybody.
I'm just hoping that, you know, you see those pictures from Brazil where there's like a million people turning
up. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, wouldn't it be awesome if that happened?
Are you guys doing anything?
I will. I'm going to go past. I'm definitely going to Pretoria. I'm not going to hang out with the DA people in their own separate little march out here in Joburg.
You're joining the Pretoria march, which is going to be the big one, we suppose, because it's much more a civil society thing than the politicians. Yeah. Good for you.
Look, I've got no excuse to not. You know, it's not like I've got a day job I've got to be at. You know, I've got to go and do this
thing. But you got a gig tonight. So.
Yeah, but you know, like, I've got to go and do this.
You know
this
what? Those crowds tonight are going to be celebrating.
We'll tell them. And yeah, when you're done protesting, come watch me.
Come give me some money.
Just come give me money.
And you, Lise?
I will be by Randburg area. They already gathering up in Bears No Deer. So I'll be that side, just, you know. Because, like, it's one of those, as I said, we're protesting for the same thing. Yes, our opinions are different, but for once, this one thing is the same. And then I'm going to go home and have a glass of wine in my room.
See, and what's,
you say a glass, what you mean is a bag.
And people say, oh, but that's so middle class, how could you? You know, so the other people had to walk home in the dead of night, cold, having been shot at, petrol bombed, all that kind of, But this is a different time. You can actually protest in a sophisticated way these days, and you don't have to feel bad. You'd be like on your phone while you're marching.
Look at me on fleek.
And someone smart is going to make a lot of money by selling boerewors rolls and ice lollies and condoms,
coffee, because it's quite cold.
You could use the protest selfie hashtag.
You could use the march today to hook up, right?
Well, stop Tinder. Why Tinder? There's protest.
apparently Sivengesi is going on AKA this morning. So there's some violence and fighting going on there. And Jonathan Witt says, I know Warren is a big fan of the Renegade Report. Tell him we say hi.
He's being ironic because for me the idea of white conservative men defending white conservative men is not renegade or rebel. You're the empire, motherfuckers.
All right, well,
defending the empire.
Like here is a diversity of opinion.
No, I know.
The new Shabin franchise, the Zupta's. You set up different Shabins all over the country called Zupta.
Oh.
That could be very good. My enemy's enemy could be your enemy.
What?
That's the line underneath. You know, confuse
that's a slogan.
Confuse the hell out of people. All right, so thank you guys. It's lovely to have you here. I know it's a busy day today and there's a lot of other stuff going on. I appreciate you making some time for us this morning. Plus for you comics to wake up anytime before
12.
9, 10, 11, 12.
I don't know what the whether this is acceptable, but I had to be up this morning early anyway because I'm releasing my own first podcast. We've been filming it live the last couple of weeks.
Nice.
Where is it, dude?
We've been filming it in Greenside. It's going to be on SoundCloud and iTunes.
I'm going to fucking Greenside to listen to your record every day.
Man, you must watch it live. It's a blazing show.
So Warren, you've got your own podcast. Good.
Award-winning podcast,
dude. The more people come to the internet, the better for all of us.
Yeah.
I'm happy. You don't have to give me credit. We were just the first people to try this in a big way. No. And I hope more people come. More people listen to your podcast, more people listen to podcasts in general. The less we have to have of average radio in our lives.
You know?
That would be amazing. Because, I've been, I listen to a bunch of international podcasts, you know, on anywhere I drive.
And the Renegade
anywhere
Report.
I drive. Yeah. Not really the Renegade Report. And Simi RF's Lesson on Somebody's. Simi RF's Lesson on Somebody's is excellent, yeah. So I listen to these things and I find that I'm enjoying my commutes a lot more, you know, enjoying the traffic a lot more. It's
it's your time. It's private time and you can use it to expand your mind.
That's right.
I listen to a variety of stuff too, so I don't just listen to what we do here at Tiff Central. We've got a huge variety of shows as it is, but I like to listen to, you know, some intelligent stuff, some stupid stuff.
It opens your mind. It really does. It broadens and it makes you go, really? That's the new thing now?
Tim says, are you still able to listen live through WeChat? The link doesn't seem to be working. Yeah, Tim, that also still works. So we've got WeChat and we're on the app and we're on the website. So you can use either of those if you want to. And you can also do what Warren's just suggested for his one, which is to subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes. In fact, that's the best way because then I just get them updated automatically.
That's right. Then it just automatically comes to your system and it's there.
You don't have to download them one by one. All right, you two. Have a very, very safe, happy day protesting, and I hope we get to show the government the middle finger today.
Yeah.
Because we're sick to goddamn death of having to pay for their fuck-ups. Yeah.
All the time.
And have to end up poorer every day because of their bad decisions. Get out there, make a difference. And to everybody else, we're on your side, and you can listen to cliffcentral.com today. We've got Gas Comedy coming up next with Dave Levinson and Eric Janssen, and then Sex Talk with John T. Searle. It's a filthy, filthy, dirty show. They always just make me very uncomfortable. I can't listen to it when there's someone else around.
I always feel the same way about the Gas podcast, though. It makes you feel filthy and dirty.
It's embarrassing. It just makes you go, I'm dirty for laughing at this. I'm such a terrible human.
Dave's a wonderful person.
And look after yourself this weekend. If you are going to be taking to the streets today, good for you. No reason why you shouldn't. And don't let anyone try and talk you out of it if it's in your heart and in your mind to do so.
Do it.
And you know what? It's a day where you just, I don't care if you're EFF, I don't care if you're DA, I don't care if you're SACP, I don't care if you're with the Katrada Foundation. You know, all that shit's not important at this point. Just let's do something as a country for once. For once!
Just this one time, guys.
Yeah, that's not asking
that
too much.
Related to sport.
And can I tell you what? I know what's going to happen at these protests. People are going to be—they're going to love it. They're going to say, "Ah, but look how unified we are."
We're one thing.
And then by Saturday morning,
everyone is fighting again.
Back
everyone
in your
is...
corner on Twitter. Stop it.
Who's bringing the Pepsi? That's what I want to know.
That's going to save the day, right?
Right. That's
what a pity that Pepsi isn't so easily available in South Africa because we could solve all this shit like that. Like Kendall Jenner, she just
that.
And you know when she marched with Martin Luther King, I tell you what. That was what really
galvanized the SFAR movement. You're right.
So special. All right, listen, you two. Thank you, and have a lovely day. That
thank
is
you.
Our special guests for the morning. For April Fooling Around, we thought we'd bring in comedians Lihle Msimang, Warren Robertson. Pleasure to have you here. CliffCentral.com.